Welcome to the fifth episode of our stories here for 1521 2QN, a big anniversary show, if you will. That means it's time for a chat with our Mayor of the Edward River Council, Peter Betts. Peter, first question for you. Tell me about why local government matters.
Local government matters because people matter. That's why.
I mean, it's pretty much a simple answer there, isn't it?
I'm blonde, AJ. You've got to keep this in mind. I'm blonde. It's got to be simple.
I actually don't know the answer to this. Are you from Denny originally?
Yes. Born and bred, never left here. Went to school here and worked here my whole life and, yeah, never left, except to go on holidays occasionally, but no, outside of that.
Tell us about growing up in Deniliquin and what that was like for you.
Growing up in Denny's pretty cool, actually. So I'm the youngest of three children, three girls, and my parents saved the best till last, is what I tell my beautiful siblings.
You're actually the middle child. That's the funny part of it.
You're not, though. Is there a middle child? Wasn't it Middle Child's Day the other day or something?
Oh, something like that. I don't know.
Like anything to do with middle children, you forget about them.
I don't have that position. I'm one of two, so I get to be the baby of the family.
Well, it has its perks, I'm not going to lie, but yeah, being the baby of the family. But no, I grew up out at Canargo, actually. So I grew up, I know this is going to sound awful, and I am the mayor now and things change, but grew up out at the Canargo pub and the store, and it was a real community out there. And that's where I grew up until I was a teenager, and then we moved into town, closer to town.
That's one of the best ways to be brought up, though, isn't it? Just in that real community environment that you have in those Denny, you know, for the grander scheme of things, is a small town as it is, but those small communities around those towns, they're the fabric of the place.
100%. And what's that saying about it takes a village?
It takes a village to raise a child.
Yeah. And that was how it was out there. Everybody got on, everyone was part of everybody's family, everybody looked out for each other, and life was simple, but life was good. Life was fun. Yeah.
What kind of memories do you have of growing up around here?
I mean, it's definitely changed, Denny, over the years, but I come from a huge sporting family. So we were very much into sport, and that's what you did for fun and entertainment, and yeah, for all sorts of reasons. That too is a social event in itself. So yeah.
What kind of sports were you good at? Were you into? What was that kind of like?
Right. So I'm not going to say I was good at anything, but definitely tennis. So my grandmother was Flo Allen, and she was a professional tennis coach here for years. And then that middle sister was sort of talking about before that, you know, you forget about. Well, she moved away and came back and picked up where Nan left off. And she was a coach here for 20 years. So, yeah, mostly tennis, but and definitely netball. So...
So you'd appreciate then, this is something that comes up in all of these conversations that we have, how much these clubs, they kind of form such a big part of this community, and everyone who's a part of that club, you feel so close with everybody who's there. It kind of feels like a giant family by the end.
Oh, that's right. And I think that's where clubs are important. You always hear people move to town, like in my conveyancing role now, you know, people come to town, new people, and they'll join a sporting club or they'll join something like that, because that's how you meet people, and that's how you expand those connections and all that sort of thing. They're huge, hugely important. But AJ, having said that, kids don't play sport like we used to. And I don't know whether it's because we didn't have other options, you know, like social media and, you know, all that sort of stuff. But, you know, you went to school, you come home, you had chores to do, you got kicked outside, don't come back in till it's dark, and, you know, things like that. And you did. You made your own fun, and it was good fun. And, you know, you only ever hurt yourself. You didn't go out of your way to damage other people or destroy other people's belongings and things. And but, yeah, community and sporting groups are huge, and they're huge for small towns.
I also think it was better for playing more sports when you're younger too. Like I played footy, cricket, soccer, basketball, pretty much anything I could get my hands on. I don't think that happens as much anymore either.
No, and you really notice it. Like we played like mostly tennis, mostly netball, but yeah, I had a crack at basketball and I had a crack at a few other things, and you know, I never really took to hockey and cricket. I'd My mum played cricket for New South Wales or something back in the day, so I'd rather watch paint dry than play cricket, let alone watch cricket, and you know. But yeah, they definitely don't. And I think you notice that by the North tennis courts are a classic example. Like, we grew up on those courts. You know, as I said, my grandmother coached, my sister coached over there. There was always, you know, you had the massive big Easter tennis tournament here and all the courts were used. My grandparents had got two courts out there. They were used. And it's just got smaller and smaller and smaller. And it's sad. Like, everyone gets upset that these things go. But if you don't use them, you lose them. And you talk to the sporting groups around and they're desperate to build their numbers in the Auskicks and the crickets. You know, all the ovals once were used. DNA was packed all day Saturday, 9 to 5. There was kids and people everywhere. Not as much.
This is a loaded question. How do you think we go about as a community bringing people back to organisations like that and back to playing sport and being around the community?
I think we've got to take responsibility. Like, I know with my kids, and as a single mum, you encourage them to have a hand at anything, and the traits go down the family line, don't they? So if I'm from a sporting family, obviously I'm going to encourage my kids. Now, you know what I said to them? It didn't have to be tennis or it didn't have to be netball. Pick your own sport. Like, my daughter loves football, and that's perfectly fine. But at some point, you know, we've got to encourage them to get out there, show them the benefits and, you know, healthy body, healthy mind, all that sort of stuff. But, yeah, putting people back out and mixing, socialising, communicating, because they're all skills that, you know, you hide behind your computer all day or your social media games and all that sort of stuff, you lose those skills. And, you know, it's not going to make for a better world in 20, 30, 40, 50 years' time.
When you were going through school and things like that, what had you kind of in your mind set out as where you wanted to end up in life? What was the dream, I guess?
To get to the end of school.
I can really relate to that in an odd way as well. I think a lot of people could get to that. It's like, you want, when you're very, very young, it's like, oh, I want to be this, I want to be that. And then when you're 15, it's like, I want to graduate. God, just get me to the end of this.
I just want to be out of this place. Like, I've but you know what? It's the old hindsight, AJ. It's hindsight. It's like, it's the best social years of your life. Sorry, Mum and Dad, I got the grades in the end, but let's not lie about it. It is the best social event on the calendar is going to school, because once you leave all that behind, apparently you've got to be an adult and mature and get a job and pay for your own stuff. And, you know, your parents are suddenly turning your bedroom into the new bathroom or something. It's like, is that a hint there? Like, really?
You don't realise how great... And you can't tell your kids either how great school is and how you should embrace it. Like, Mum and Dad tried to tell me that thousands of times. I never took it in. And then I got out of school. I'm like, wow, that was great. And they're like, yeah, we tried to tell you that.
So I'm going through the, oh, my gosh, I sound like my mother stage. Which, you know, I love you, Mum, but, you know. Yeah, you know, stay at school, do the right thing, get a good education. I got a daughter that's just in the middle of trial exams, year 12, and she just does not want to be there. And that's fine. That's okay. But it's also around the principle of you got to finish what you start. Finish. Walking away now is the easy option. Anyone can do that. So I'm all for having a bit more of a crack. But, yeah, I'm saying to her what my mother said to me and inwardly rolling my eyes at myself going, oh, my God, I sound like my mother. I used to, you know, my mum would say those things and be like, yeah, whatever, what would you know? Well, apparently she did.
It's funny when you get to that point of realising, oh, wow, they were right this entire time. I know nothing.
Oh, come
Mom
on.
And Dad know everything. I was so wrong about all of this.
I'm not going that far. I'm not going to come out and publicly say my parents were... They could have perhaps got it. You know what you were just saying? Yeah. No, you're not getting me on that
They
one.
May have some idea, but I'm not willing to quite admit it quite yet. So what did you end up studying through schools and after that?
So I was a real bookworm at school, believe it or not. I loved reading, and I always used to find that you not only did you learn a lot, but you could lose yourself in books. You could go on the best adventures, you know. So, and a bit of Amelia Jane, you know, the Enid Blyton and Amelia Jane's adventures, and do some naughty things and have a bit of fun, and it always ended up well in the process. But I think because I never really knew what I wanted to do, you know, I was advised just pick the subjects you like to do. And, of course, I loved history. I did a lot of history and, but, you know, in the end ended up in a legal career and that's it.
How did the legal career come about and what are your key things that you did take away from that career so far?
So the career came about, so I finished high school, went to TAFE, as a lot of people did back then, and did a full-time secretarial course, not quite sure still what I wanted to do. And then one of the legal firms here in town, which was Snyder and Sybury at the time, reached out that they were looking for a junior legal secretary. So my family were very good friends with Maurice Snyder, and so, yeah, got that job and I just never left.
Conveyancing, how did you get into that?
So working at the solicitor's office, we merged with Glowry's, and then the legal office, you did wills and probates and workers' comp and all sorts of things. But conveyancing really, really took my fancy. So I worked with Maurie because that's all he did, as time went on leading into his retirement. And then in the end, I just thought I can do this. I can do this myself. There was a niche in the community. There was no conveyances here. Go out and did a degree and started my own business. And what is it, 13 years later, here I am.
What about working with Maurie on it made you passionate about it? Did something particularly jump out at you and say, well, that's something that I haven't seen before. That's something that I want to know more about and to be able to provide that service. Or was it just a case of there's something different there that I could get involved in?
I think being the eternal optimist that I am, I'm always glass half full. So I think part of it was the excitement of it's new beginnings. People buying new houses, seeing, and to this day, I have the biggest soft spot for first home buyers. They're as cute as buttons, and it's just getting people into houses, upgrading, downsizing, moving around. You get involved in all that sort of stuff, and it 9 times out of 10, it turns out as a happy ending, and it's being involved in helping people. One of the biggest decisions you make in your life, AJ, is buying a house. So to play a small part and to help them achieve that goal, really, I just find amazing, and I just love it.
Particularly with first-time buyers, as you mentioned there, do you worry when you look at how things are now and how challenging it is for young people in particular? As you mentioned, you've got a daughter who's getting towards the end of year 12 now, and you've got a young son as well. Do you worry about how it's going to be for them to get into the market and to buy a house and things along those lines?
I do. I do. And I think that's fair to say. But, you know, when I started out, my parents probably worried about me doing the same thing. You know, I bought my first house I paid a massive $52,000 for it, I think. And, and interest rates back then were 14%, 15%, but you did it, you know. And I think I don't take anything away from kids today. Kids, but they want a lot, and they want it all now, and it's available to them now. And sometimes they can be their own worst enemy for that. And it's about appreciating having to work for things, getting things down the track. You don't have to have it all at once. You know, not everything has to be bright, shiny, sparkly. Is it going to be hard? Yes, but they're going to be the master of their own destinies when it comes to that sort of thing. So, yeah, it's your expectations, I guess.
What's a memory that stands out from that career so far? Like any particular people that you've helped or any story that really stands out? Because I think we all have that in our jobs where we can walk away someday and say, you know what, I'm going to remember that one. That incident that I was involved in or that couple that I helped. Does anything really stand out to you as that's a memory that's going to last a long time?
I've had a couple, and it's the ones that come back, you know what I mean? And so then it's the, you end up doing generations of them. It gets passed down the line. And I mean, I could say that my fame to claim is I was involved in an $80 million, AJ, $80 million conveyance.
You can't see my face, obviously, through the radio, but I look pretty dumb right now. I've just got, what?
Yeah, so I mean, I could say, yeah, that's something I meant, but it's not about the money to me. It's about the people. You know, and sometimes it's the person buying the first home for the $100,000 that's worked their butt off to get where they are, and in their mind they've bought the Taj Mahal, and that they're the exciting moments, and you see them, particularly the ones in town, you see them down the street months later, and they're like, oh Pete, you know, and I've done this and I've done that to my house, and yeah, you really get involved in them. So yeah, there's some good, some bad.
What's the best piece of advice you could give to someone who is looking at buying a house?
Go and speak to your bank first. You would be amazed, the people that ring up and go, hey, Pete, I bought a house. Excellent. You've been to the bank. Oh, no. So my best piece of advice is go to the bank and ask two questions. One, can I borrow some money? Yes, AJ, you can borrow some money to buy a first house.
No bank is letting me borrow money to buy a house right now. I can guarantee you that. I do not have the capital to get that kind of loan.
There's plenty of lending opportunities out there. But yeah, go and ask the question, can I borrow? Yes, AJ, you can borrow some money. How much can I borrow, Mr. Bank Manager? AJ, you can borrow $100,000. Go shopping in that price range, AJ. Don't go out there and, you know, expecting a $300,000 home, and you're going to make the whole experience a lot more enjoyable.
We'll move on to the council role now. When did you first decide that getting involved in council was something that you wanted to pursue?
It wasn't until we amalgamated. So I'd never really thought about it up until then, but for whatever reason, I don't know what triggered it, and there's no real specific thing. It was when we amalgamated. I'm like, I'd like to get on board. This is a new opportunity, you know, two councils coming together to make a change, and we needed to change. We needed to move forward and do something good.
And that wasn't an easy time for people, was it? I obviously wasn't here at the time. I think I was still in Tassie back when those two councils amalgamated, but there's always concern around things like that, and it's a tough time for everybody involved. And credit to the people who steered us through this, particularly to the late Norm Brennan as well, who played a key role in that. But that must have been tough for the communities to have these councils amalgamate and become this one Edward River Council.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the stories you hear afterwards, and I mean, Norm, to his credit, he was not a fan of it at all. He didn't want it, but he put all that aside for the better good and really helped us work through it. So yeah, there was concerns, but AJ, you had two different councils. You know, Kanaga Council was roads, 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 and Deniliquin, you know, it's got infrastructure and buildings and curb and guttering, and so to bring those two together, I think part of it's fear of the unknown, because what did the other council have and things like that. You know, Kanaga, absolutely taking nothing away from them, they mostly did roads, they got a lot of grants, they had a lot of money. You know, Deniliquin perhaps didn't get as many grants but had a lot more to look after. So it was a learning curve on both party side.
When did you first run for council?
So at that election for the amalgamation.
So the first amalgamated council, yeah.
Yes, yes.
When you did get into council, did you have something set in mind that, okay, this is what I want to see in my first term, this is what's going to be my priority to see this through for our community? Did something stand out to you at the time as, this is what I really want to set my goals around?
No. I can honestly say I had no idea. And I went, and my...
Is that arguably better, do you think, instead of saying, okay, well, I'm going to be centric on this thing to go and say, no, I'm just going to go in there with an open mind of just knowing that I want to do what's best for this community and find as many different things that I can to get us through and to contribute to this community?
That's exactly right, because, you know, you kept hearing stories, you know, people have got an agenda, people are pushing their own barrow and things like that. I mean, I'm about as honest as you're going to get. Sometimes to my detriment, you know, I need to learn to zip it occasionally. But no, my whole campaign was based on, I was there for the people. Everyone knew, a lot of people knew who I was. I was open, I was honest. I'm going to make you accountable. I'm going to call you out. And that was what I went in. I'm not going in on anything particular. I just want to be the voice for those people who don't have a voice and ask the questions. Why? Why do we do it like that? Why hasn't that changed? Why?
There's always challenges for council. It's never, you know, local politics is, it's difficult. But it feels like this council does have priorities that they're looking forward to, and they're saying, okay, well, this is what we're going to do to make this community better in the way that we're currently sitting. What stands out to you is the next 5 to 10 years of goals for the Edward River Council and what you want to deliver for the community?
So we are about to kick off on our growth strategy. And that's, you know, that's our goal is to get people to come here, to live here, to grow, you know, to grow our population, and one thing leads to another, to another, to another. So all those exciting things. But I tell you, we got councillors that have flown out of the blocks. Like, I think back in my time, and I went on, and myself and Marg Bull were the only new councillors. So I went on with 7 councillors that had so much experience. You know, one of them had been 30 years and been mayor a few times and whatever. So I had that benefit, and it was great to soak it up and all that guidance and thing. Tables have turned. I'm now, there's now 7 of me on the other side of that table, but they're really kicking some goals, and they've got some great ideas, and it's exciting. It's to have such a variety of opinions. Like, you know, today's meeting, we're normally done in a couple of hours. You know, I think that's in history. It's got to be the longest council meeting we've ever had. We walked out at 1:45. You know, we started at 9:00. Why? Because there's a lot of things to talk about, and they all wanted to talk about them.
And that says everything you need to know about this council, isn't it? That it's like we're not gonna wrap it up because we want it to finish. We're gonna keep pushing the issue, and we're gonna do what we think is best. And you're not always gonna get the same opinion on that, but it's always gonna be for the betterment of the community.
Mm-hmm. There's definitely no tick and flick. There's no tick and flick in this council. They're asking a lot of questions, and so they should. You know, they need to make informed decisions on behalf of everybody. So they're, you know, well, can we change that, or what if we do it that way, or how does, you know, and to sit around listening to the debate, you know, like there's a couple of occasions today and councillors disagreed, and that's great. That's perfectly fine. That's a democratic process. But to hear that, with all due respect, I don't agree with you, councillor, whatever, and then they'd sit back and go, well, I hadn't thought of it like that either. So eventually that's, you know, after all that debate, you come to agreement. And there was a matters today that not all councillors voted for, but they're okay with that. And that's okay, and that's what the community needs.
I think that's how it should be, really, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely, how it should be.
What do you want to see the most in this community in the next couple of years? Well, you talked about the growth strategy, and that's going to be essential for here, but, you know, even in the year or so that I've been here, I've seen a lot of changes in Deniliquin and the surrounding areas, and a lot of growth and a lot of things improving. What stands out to you as something that we can improve to make our community even better than it currently is?
We really need, when we say we're open for business, we need to be open for business. So I think even like the anticipation of the town hall, like, oh my gosh, that is so exciting. Every politician, everyone that comes here wants to see the town hall. So we had Ramjo here last week, all the other mayors from around, they all want to see the town hall. So, you know, to build on those things, to, $4.3 million for Southwest Music. Hello. $715,000 for Yarkawa. It's starting to speak for itself. So many aspects of our community have so much to offer. So to see them grow and grow and grow from that, and then what that brings in from that, you know, and everybody's got, everyone's agenda is to come together. And I haven't seen that in this community for a long time. And I think that's exciting.
My two favourite questions are my last two questions that I have for you. I love asking these of people because it makes them think a little bit. Question one is, who inspires you the most in life?
Anyone who's willing, does it have to be a, you want to?
No, it doesn't have to be a specific person, right. That's fine.
Anyone willing to get out and have a go? Anyone with a positive approach? Anyone that's just someone that's honest and isn't nasty or mean in their approach. They're just honest. And it is, I hate this saying, but it is what it is. But yeah, you're just willing to get out there, have a go, and you don't want anything for it. You know what I mean? Like, I think there's a lot of people that are looking for that pat on the back. They're looking for that recognition. You know, not for me.
Final question. How do you want to be remembered?
As the mayor who got the most amount of politicians in I Know Someone from Denny T-shirts that ever existed in the Edward River Council.
I like that. I'm all for that being the goal. That's a good outcome, and I love what that's doing for the community as a side note. We see it pop up every now and then. I'm like, that's another one. We'll gradually tick everyone off the list. We'll have the whole country in a shirt at some point.
So, just as an insider, I just bought two more shirts on the way down. What's this space for tomorrow?
Ooh. I want to know who we got in tomorrow now. We'll have to find out, and we can find that on your social media, and you'll probably see it on our social media here at 2QN as well.
Awesome.
Peter Betts, thank you very much for joining us on our stories.
Oh, no, thank you very much. Have a good one. Thanks, AJ.